Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the FFC Podcast. I'm your host, Deegs, joined today by Mr. Prospect Jesus himself and my colleague over at Prospects Live, Ralph Lifshitz. Ralph, how are we doing today, man?
What's going on, Deegs?
Is that what I'm supposed to call you on this podcast? Like, I call you Diego on ours, so is it Deegs? Should I go with Deegs?
Hey, man, you know, on Twitter and actually everywhere else, my friends all call me Deegs. It's kind of been a nickname for my entire life, but you know nice. What? You can call me whatever you want, so whatever tickles your fancy, you go ahead and just call me that. But you know, Ralph, tell the listeners of my podcast, you know, who are primarily Padres fans, maybe aren't, incredibly familiar with who you are, a little bit about yourself.
Sure, yeah. So I'm, one of the co-founders of the website Prospects Live. We launched back in September of 2018, and over the last, 15, 16 months, things have grown tremendously. We've added a bunch of writers. I think we've sort of changed a little bit in terms of like our approach and our coverage and expanded a lot more than I think even what the initial vision was. But we cover the minor leagues, heavily the draft, summer college leagues like the Cape Cod League. Hope to expand out, Northwoods and some other leagues next year as well over the course of the summer. College ball, some prep events, of course. And then the fantasy side of things. And that sort of leads into what my background is. I started a fantasy website, one of the bigger ones by the name of Razzball. I wrote like DFS content. I wrote about two start pitchers. I started breaking down pitcher starts, like underrated, guys outside like the top 50 starters that I thought could potentially like have a breakthrough. And then I got the prospect job end of 2015. And for the last 5 seasons now, I think this is my 6th season. I've been writing about prospects, and initially it started sort of as a fantasy angle thing. I had been around the game, played the game, not in college, but I played in some summer wooden bat leagues and stuff, played at a decent level in high school, and always just followed prospects. I was a bat boy for a minor league team when I was a kid. So it was just sort of natural to go into it, and over the last couple of years, I've started to go to games, shoot video, edit video, kind of learn about the scouting side of things. And I think it's helped expand my vision and coverage and understanding of the game. So I think that's sort of, the 10-cent tour.
Yeah. Ralph does a lot of great work over at Prospects Live, as do all the other writers there. So make sure you drop a follow for them and follow him on Twitter at Prospect Jesus. It really is a really good Twitter follow. So, Ralph, you're a Red Sox fan, as we all know. Well, as I know, as hopefully my listeners know by now. So this is going to be all kind of an outsider's view, unbiased take on everything we talk about today. So to kick this off, I just want to, get your thoughts and outsider's thoughts, per se, on the overall composition of the Padres and where they are right now and moving forward as an organization in your eyes.
Yeah, well, I think, I don't think it's any sort of epiphany or anything to say that they're at a point right now where they're sort of at a crossroads where they've been acquiring assets in different fashions, over the course of a few years. They were sort of ingenious, Preller in particular, taking on a lot of dead money in deals and players back for that dead money. And what that did was it got ownership sort of comfortable at a certain spend level. As those contracts have slowly sort of dripped off of the books over the last few years, they've been able to add some pretty, sizable contracts and big name free agents, particularly Manny Machado, but, of course, Eric Hosmer as well, regardless of what you think about that contract. But, and they had, obviously a couple guys that we'll talk about a little bit later, really blossom at the major league level, with Fernando Tatis Jr. I don't think it's any, sort of an epiphany or major statement to say that Tatis Jr. probably should have been the number one prospect in baseball, hands down, over Vladimir Guerrero Jr. coming into the season. And he certainly proved that. And then, of course, Chris Paddock, has sort of emerged as maybe not an ace necessarily, but certainly like a legitimate number two starter on a good team. And they still have a ton of, assets in the minor leagues. And this season, they've done a good job of sort of turning some parts that maybe didn't necessarily fit together all that well. There's still a few other odd, you know, so I guess square pegs like Will Myers at this point that you'd like to see move on. But I think, you know, adding Trent Grisham, who I think we'll talk about once again a little bit later, a left-handed hitting outfielder, while he's not a center fielder, you know, there are some, you know, at least defensive skills there. I don't think he's a complete liability. And then trading for Tommy Pham, we'll see what the health is like. But if you're able to get 130, 140 games and have that guy in your lineup down the stretch, he adds, you know, an entire different dimension to the top of that order, where you have a guy that, you know, is going to work counts, grind out pitchers, really grounded at bats, get on base at a high level. Once he's on base, you know, I think even beyond the base stealing, you know, he's not a station to station runner, you know, in the sort of National League game, whatever you have to manufacture runs at times, he can do that. And he can also obviously hit for a little bit of power. So I think, you know, they've really upgraded this lineup already in the offseason. I think we'd all like to see them add, you know, maybe a frontline starter, if at all possible. And that could really put him over the top to compete here in the division. I guess it's really just a matter of assets and money and sort of how some of those things move. And I don't think it can be underrated. They did a pretty good job of adding at least a back end sort of innings eater, a professional starter, and a guy like Zach Davies that give them a little bit more major league experience depth up there. I think that's good. And then you have a major question mark in Garrett Richards, who, I mean, there's the range of outcomes there, yeah, with Richard is nuts. Incredibly large. Yeah. But, you know, I guess once again, you know, that's, you know, digging in a little bit here. You know, there are some arms. There's still a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent at the top of the minors now with guys like Maury Hahn or even Baez, who, you know, certainly could contribute, if not in a starting role, at, you know, definitely in the bullpen. So there's a lot going on here. We know about Mackenzie Gore. We know about Luis Patino. So there's just, they could maybe make a move, maybe not make a move. And I think at the end of the day, there's enough pieces here that they're going to be a really exciting team in 2020 and could potentially be a monster 2021, 2022.
Yeah. I mean, for a fan that has never seen his team play in the playoffs, I really hope that that's the case. But, you know, a guy that kind of surprised people last – I wouldn't say surprised, but kind of burst onto the scenes last year was Chris Paddock. We all expected him to be good. You know, he had a really good season in the minors the year prior, coming off Tommy John surgery. But I want to hear your thoughts on Chris Paddock overall as a pitcher. And then kind of give me your thoughts on where the curveball or potential third offering has to go for him to really take that next step and be a top-of-the-rotation type of guy.
Sure. So I had written an article, I want to say late February of last year. And it was a series I typically do a little bit closer to the season. And it's called Planting Flags. And it's, you know, things that I believe to be true that maybe fly in the face of, you know, sort of conventional thought or wisdom, or just sort of, you know, groupthink within the prospect community, which tends to happen. And I planted my flag and I said that, you know, I think Chris Paddock has ace upside. And a lot of it is because of, you know, how that changeup works, how elite that pitch is. And it almost really works like a breaking ball to some degree, you know, in terms of swings and misses and just keeping guys off balance. But, you know, he pounds the strike zone. The fastball, I think, was better than people realize. The velocity ticked up at the end of 2018 and it sort of showed itself into 2019. You know, and he can work all over the zone with it. And, you know, obviously we want to see him you know, do a little bit more with that curveball. You know, I think he used it about 10% of the time last year. You know, it's a slow loopy pitch, but I know it's something, you know, having talked to, you know, him a little bit last offseason, working on the article as well as his brother, it's something he's worked on and made strides with over the last few years. I just think that, you know, it's definitely a third pitch. He's been able to succeed without it. But I know it's definitely a point of emphasis just in terms of his development as a pitcher and as a player. And with a fiery guy like that, that's, you know, worked as hard as he had, as, you know, throughout his career, even from his time as, you know, a prep prospect, you know, coming up, I think, you know, what was he, an eighth or ninth round pick with the Marlins? You're getting traded for Fernando Rodney. I feel like he's just always sort of pushed the envelope and continue to improve. He's got the build. You know, I think he showed last year he can sustain the innings a little bit. I'm hoping the reins are off a little bit more this year. But, you know, the fastball velocity's there. He's got a true plus secondary pitch. it's just a matter of, you know, him sort of developing, you know, another secondary, whether it's, you know, that curveball takes a step forward, or maybe there's something else he's even working on. That's certainly possible in, you know, this day and age, development and pitch design and some of the things that these guys can sort of dive into in the off season. I don't know any of that stuff for a fact. But you know, I think there's, you know, certainly, some room for growth there beyond even what you saw this year. But there's, it's a really great foundation, you know, when you look at that changeup, and a really good fastball as well, that, you know, they sort of play off of each other. It's a little peanut butter and jelly action.
Yeah. I think two things that really surprised me about Paddock last year, and maybe you can attest to this as well, was there were some starts where, I mean, the fastball was like 96 to 97 and he was dotting it up wherever he wanted to, which was kind of, you know, his calling card coming up through the minors, was that he's not going to walk a ton of guys. He walked 8 guys in all of 2018 and struck out 120 batters. So it's plus command with that fastball, but just the mentality that he has. I mean, that guy goes out every single day, you know, kind of just has this ace-like bulldog mentality where he's going to get guys out all the time. It's, you know, it's me on you in the batter's box, you know, this bulldog mentality. So I'm going to bet on Chris Paddock to kind of figure it out no matter what happens. But I think right now the curveball is kind of like a get me over pitch. A lot of the times last year he was flipping it over, you know, just to get ahead in the count, and then he would go fastball change from there. But I think if he can develop any kind of secondary or third pitch, whether it's a curveball, slider, a cutter, or just something to give a different look, I think we're looking at a guy who could really be a legit number two on a very good playoff team.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree on that, man. I like Paddock. Want to bet on that kid.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about a guy who was a first-round pick out of Texas a couple years ago by the Milwaukee Brewers, Trent Grisham. Obviously, recently acquired by the Padres this past offseason in the Luis Urias, Eric Lauer, Zach Davies trade. Give me your thoughts on Grisham. You mentioned earlier in the podcast that he's probably not a center fielder. So just tell me where he is right now in terms of, you know, his bat and how he fits in defensively with this Padres team.
Yeah, I mean, it's a high contact profile that sort of sustained itself to a degree, you know, throughout his season last year, where he sort of climbed the high minors, really had a breakout. Somebody who's a little bit more athletic, I think, earlier in his career. He's about an average runner, maybe a little bit above average at this point. But, you know, he does a good job of, you know, putting the ball in the air. He's strong, powerful, short to the ball. And I think, you know, he's got a good baseline, a sort of contact ability. You know, his zone contact numbers and contact numbers throughout the minors were good. They were a little bit above average, right around, you know, 80% with that contact number where you want to see. And I think you see that with his game. He can get his bat in the ball, but he does look, you know, to put the ball, elevate, and make good contact. I don't think he sells out in terms of, you know, a big uppercut swing or launch angle. There's actually almost something a little bit about his setup that I think, you know, if you watch enough like Ken Burns baseball documentaries in the off season, you know, must say he sort of has an old school sort of feel to him as well. I think he's a no batting gloves guy.
Yeah, he is.
But he's, you know, I like Grisham. I think, you know, he's a good all around ball player. He runs the bases pretty well. I don't think he's a center fielder. He can probably, you know, fill in there when needed, but he's really a right fielder to me. And he, you know, played pretty well. His defensive grades were good throughout the minors, and the numbers backed it up in terms of like zone rating or whatever you want to look at in the majors. So, yeah, I mean, I like the guy. I think he's got, you know, good contact skills, a little bit of power. And, you know, he gives you that lefty bat that I think was something that was, you know, sort of sorely needed last year. Yeah, he's an upgrade. And, you know, getting a guy that's that young, just turned 23, he's going to be 23 for the entirety of next season. There's a lot of upside there, and that's a nice little piece that you could add to the core to go along with, you know, guys like Taylor Trammell or whoever there in the minor leagues. They got, you know, plenty of, obviously, players at this point. It's going to be a crowded outfield situation there within a year or so.
Now, does it concern you at all that, you know, prior to this year where he really broke out in AAA, you know, Grisham was kind of a guy that was swept under the rug, wasn't a really highly touted prospect in the Brewers organization on most publications. And I actually read an article on The Athletic where they were talking about how when the Brewers drafted him, they changed up the way that he grips the bat. And now he has gone back to his old school grip the bat where the top hand and the thumb is kind of a tad bit more elevated. So do you think that, this offensive outbreak he had, you know, this past season was just him being more comfortable, or was it just kind of an anomaly and he's not going to be, you know, he's just going to go back to being a prospect that we kind of forget about?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely, you know, a matter of being more comfortable. I also think it's an age thing. You know, he added good muscle, good weight onto his body, and sort of matured into the power a little bit. The pedigree was always there. You know, some of the lower levels, the parks, particularly in the Brewer system, are sort of tough to hit in. And I feel like there's a lot of guys get eaten up, and then all of a sudden the numbers are a lot better once they're up. So, yeah, you know, he's one of those sort of tough players because guys like that with sort of pedigree that come out of high school, it's a slow burn. You know, they're so young. There's so much they gotta learn. The minor league experience isn't great, even if you know have a big signing bonus. And you gotta learn how to play the game too. You know, you can't just get by on natural ability. So a guy like that, I'm a little bit, you know, more willing to sort of buy into the breakout as opposed to like a 25-year-old who starts mashing the PCL or something like that. So I don't have too many questions about Grisham because I think that the overall plate discipline was really good. There's pop in the bat. You know, there's nothing that really gives me any massive concern. Could it be a guy that, you know, depending upon injuries, things like that, he might be, you know, prone to some rough seasons? Yeah, it's possible. But, you know, it's just that's in the variable of any ball player probably.
Yeah. Well, Chris Paddock and Trent Grisham are awesome guys to talk about. But I don't think there's a single player in this entire organization that is more fun to talk about than Fernando Tatis Jr. You know, we obviously saw what he did last year, broke training camp with the team, kind of went nuts for 84 games before going down with a season-ending back injury. Really quickly, you kind of touched on earlier how, you know, Tatis, Vlad, whatnot. I want you to give me a realistic outlook on what Fernando Tatis Jr. could be over the next decade for the Padres. Is it possible that, you know, that we're seeing a guy who has the potential to be a top five player in baseball, a perennial MVP candidate, a guy who could maybe one day take that step and, you know, be the face of Major League Baseball, given just how electric he is on the base paths, in the game, on the field, just everything he does is so fun to watch. So just give me your realistic outlook on Tatis.
Yeah, I mean, for him to be a top five player in the game, I mean, he's certainly one of the top five most exciting players in the game. I don't think there's any question about that. And there's, you know, defensive value there as well. Yeah, you know, I don't think he's necessarily an elite shortstop at this point. But, you know, he's a very good shortstop, certainly incredibly athletic. And the things that he does in the base paths and just some of the things he can do in games, he's incredibly alert. I think, you know, his instincts and his ability to read situations in game, I think that's what separates him from a lot of other guys. The one question I have with him is still the hit tool a little bit. He swings and misses a lot.
There is a lot.
Now, he's fast enough to leg out bad contact from time to time. He swings at bad pitches and doesn't always necessarily get to pitches he should drive. I'd love to see him be a little bit more selective. He's a guy that's, you know, had some decent walk rates sort of throughout his professional career, I think particularly because people stay away from him. I think there's some serious risk that he ticks down a little bit offensively this season. Just because I don't know how sustainable, you know, if he remains the same, how sustainable that strikeout rate is with sort of the production that he put up. It's tough for me because I feel like he's a guy that might have to take like a step back to take like a step forward. But if he can improve his plate approach, because he's so young still, right? And I don't think his pitch recognition is bad. But I think it's just a matter of like honing that a little bit. It's first time seeing major league pitching. He's finished every season injured, which is a totally different story. So I don't think, you know, how long he's actually been exposed to like high level pitching really hasn't been that long. So there's probably some growth there as well. Now with players like this, they almost at this level of talent, they seem to get better from year to year. That sort of sustains, and that's what separates a lot of those guys. So there's a chance he comes out and his plate approach is improved. And we see him sort of waiting on the right pitches to drive and, you know, picking those times to sort of be aggressive when he needs to be and not totally losing that. And then doing all the other things in the base paths, seeing his power tick up, you know, seeing him mature as a defender, because that happens particularly at the, you know, the shortstop or the catching position. It's not catching, but, you know, it's right there in terms of how long it sort of takes to learn that position and do all the little things well. So, he's got as good odds to become a top five player as anybody that's outside the top five right now, and particularly anybody that's under 25. But I want to proceed with caution a little bit. There's a little bit of a few red flags there still with Tatis, just with the approach. And then I think probably the injury thing. I think just the way he plays the game with reckless abandon tends to lend itself to, you know, injuries. And, yeah. You know, if you're going to be a top five player in the game, you got to stay in the field. You know, Carlos Correa started his career in a different player, you know, like gangbusters. And we've seen over the last few years, his stock kind of ticked down a little bit just simply because he hasn't been able to stay in the field. So I think that's all part of it. I love the player. You know, if there's one player that I would tell, you know, somebody who didn't think baseball was exciting to watch for a few games, I would probably tell them to watch Fernando Tatis Jr., you know, Mike Trout, but he's right up there, man.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we have to expect some offensive regression from Tatis. We're talking about a guy who had a 400 BABIP before going down. That's just not sustainable. That stuff doesn't happen. But one thing I actually do want to talk about real quick is you mentioned that he's gotten hurt every single year. We obviously in Double A had that hand injury where he slid into second base and broke his hand. Last year we had that crazy play at second base where, you know, he strained his hamstring and ended up being out for a month. And then the freak back injury, you know, in where he swung and missed through a pitch and kind of, you know, literally fractured his back. So is there, you know, with how he plays the game, he's obviously going to be more susceptible to injury, but given the fact that all three of those injuries are kind of freakish injuries, you know, like him sliding into second base and breaking his hand doesn't really happen that often. The play where he hurt his hamstring was just a ridiculous, you know, split play where he just was, it was just a dumb play on his part. And then he just kind of swung and missed too hard on where he injured his back. But is this a guy that you think, you know, might be kind of injury prone moving forward, given the fact that of what we've seen already and just how insanely reckless he is playing the game? Because he goes 100% every single play, no matter what happens. So is this something that I don't even want to think about, but as a Padres fan, we should probably be a little bit concerned about?
Yeah, Deeks, I think so.
Yeah. All right, Ralph. Thanks for that, man. But
definitely been. Yeah. I think it's, yeah, like I said, he plays the game with sort of reckless abandon. So you're going to make, you know, you're going to open yourself up to injuries, particularly, you know, as a base stealer, hand injuries, things like that. Not great when you also want to be a power hitter. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, playing shortstop, but I don't want him to slow down either. So it's one of those things. It's almost like, Raul, you know, or Adalberto Mondesi, like it's not that different. Right. Tatis is a better version of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's like these freaky red flags that they sort of fly in the face of every season. And they constantly get hurt. And it's just it's a matter of them being these young sort of fresh players that do play the game so aggressively and so excitingly. It's going to happen. You know, it's a matter of him because of the kind of player he is and what he can potentially be. I think he needs to tone it down a little bit and pick his spots, you know, because he could still be that guy. But if he plays 160 games and that approach improves, oof, I mean, you know, you're talking about a legitimate top five player in the game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the Padres, from an organizational standpoint, have talked to him about it. But, you know, he's come out and said publicly before that this is how he plays the game. So we're just going to have to see. Ralph, I'm sure you've been asked this question before, And it's something that was definitely thrown around a lot last year prior to both of them making their major league debut. But if you had to pick right now, given pretty much, you know, what you saw from both of these guys last year on top of the projections, if you were a GM and you had to start an organization with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Fernando Tatis Jr., who would you pick and why?
Yeah, Fernando Tatis Jr. Okay. Because, you know, he can play shortstop.
Yeah.
And how exciting it is. And I'm not too concerned, you know, if he maybe tones it down a little bit, you know, and tries to maybe be a little bit more of a power hitter and a little bit less of, you know, an all out assault on the other team at all times. I think you can get a guy that, you know, could be your cornerstone for a really long time without any concerns about, you know, the body, and also give you, you know, value on both sides of the ball, which, as much as I like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I think his athleticism, as funny as that is to say, though he is looking, you know, very svelte this offseason.
Yeah, he is. He's looking good.
It's a lot better than people think. I mean, he actually moves laterally really well, and the arm is pretty strong. It's just sort of a matter of, I think, range with him more than anything else. But he's not a terrible third baseman. So take that for what it is. But, yeah, I believe in Tatis a little bit more and just think that he can impact the game in a variety of ways. You know, if we're talking about, you know, the hit tool improves, you know, this guy could put up, like, you know, Mookie Betts, Mike Trout production is what we're dreaming on, right, at the shortstop position, which is unparalleled.
Yeah. You know, real quick, talking about Vlad and stuff, make sure you guys go and check out the Blue Jays top 30 list on Prospects Live that Ralph just did. Shameless plug right there. But moving on to a little bit of some prospect talk here. Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino. I had them at 1 and 2 on my Prospects Live Padres top 30. I think that a lot of people, you know, are starting to view Patino as the number 2 prospect in this system. Give me a little bit about, you know, because everyone talks about Gore and Patino, you know, so I don't want to, you know, dive in and do some super crazy breakdown on either two of them. But give me a little bit of a realistic outlook for, you know, each of Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino, maybe 5 years down the line, where we expect these guys to be. Obviously, two pitching prospects that are similar in a way, but different in another. So I'm very curious to hear an outsider's view on Mackenzie Gore and Luis Patino.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Mackenzie Gore potentially, when you think about, you know, his age, that, you know, he doesn't turn 21 until the end of February. He's going to be 21 for the entirety of next season. And there's a likelihood he's going to pitch a majority of his innings because there's no reason to send him to AAA at the major league level. I had argued, and it inspired James Anderson of RotoWire to write an article, and I said this, trying to disprove me, and he still ranked him, I think, 6th overall or 7th overall in the last decade of the best pitching prospects of the last 10 years. I said he might be one of the best pitching prospects of the last 10 years, and I firmly believe that. And people were like, oh, Steven Strasburg. Steven Strasburg was still in college at this point.
Yeah.
He was going into his draft year. And he was a big deal. He was a big prospect. He wasn't even in, you know, an actual system. Now, granted, at that point, he then, you know, elevated up to the major leagues. But if this guy is in the major leagues this year, because he was, you know, a prep prospect that was, you know, a number 2 overall pick, you know, excuse me, number 3 overall pick. I, for a second, as soon as I said it, I was like, he was the 3rd overall pick. But anyway, number 3 overall pick that, you know, is sort of sustained it. And the funny thing is, you know, James had sort of argued that he was the only guy in the list that hasn't dealt with any adversity. And I don't think that's true.
That's,
I think,
not true.
2018 was, you know, a season filled with adversity when,
yeah,
you consider, you know, where he was, you know, sent to pitch. We know what the Midwest League's like, especially early in the season. There's blister problems. I believe there was an elbow flare up as well. And the underlying numbers were really good. And I think people backed off of him a little bit, because of the numbers, and it was silly. Then he came out and he absolutely pushed. He dominated the Cal League, which is never an easy place to pitch. I mean, his numbers were, you know, video game type numbers, and then, you know, pitched really well, I think, across 5 starts. You know, we still missed bats, still drove, you know, weak contact, a fair amount of ground ball contact. Walk rate went up a little bit, but, you know, I don't think it was anything that was too alarming, and kept runs off the board at the AA level, you know, and that was as you know, a 20-year-old in Double A without probably not even 100 innings of pitching experience at the professional level coming into the season. This guy is a standout, and it's beyond just the fact that, you know, he's pitched well and he had pedigree. When you look at the pitchability side of things, you look at the stuff side of things, I don't think there's many guys, you know, over the course of the last 10 years, certainly the last five or six since I've covered prospects, that can match that. People will say, you know, Forrest Whitley, but we've seen Whitley struggle in a way that we have not seen Gore struggle with, particularly with command and control. All of his stuff that he throws, you know, for the most part, Gore is crisp, you know. He's got multiple breaking balls. He's got different variations of the breaking balls. He's got a good changeup. You know, he's got oomph and giddy up on the fastball. He's got movement. There's really, you know, and on top of it, it all plays up because of his command, which is potentially double plus. So I know it's sort of tough to throw that grade out there. He's one of the few people that I'm pretty comfortable saying that. And on top of it, he's got deception from the left side. That's a guy that I'm going to bet on. I'm going to bet on him, you know, being a, you know, a potential Cy Young contender within a few years. This guy is the goods, you know, and I think you just see it. You know, it's a weird thing about his delivery too, is how absolutely bonkers it is.
It's insane. It's
not natural.
Okay.
But he's so athletic that he makes it look natural and repeatable. It makes him, you know, incredibly fun to watch. But I mean, just for Gore, for, you know, before we move on to Patino, because it sounds like you have something to say, I love him. I think he's the number one pitching prospect in baseball. I think he's, you know, arguably top 3 to 4 prospect right now. If you're just looking from a scouting perspective, not looking at fantasy, just scouting, I think that you can make a case Gore's the number two prospect right now.
I'm going to say this about his delivery real quick. So I've watched a lot of Mackenzie Gore. I watched him in high school, you know, going up to the draft. I saw him, you know, on MILB.com, obviously tried to catch as many of his starts as I possibly could. I didn't realize like how nuts his delivery is until I wrote an article on my website the other day, and I saw a picture of how high his leg gets up, and that it just looks like it hurts. Like that has to be so incredibly painful for someone that isn't as athletic as he is. But the fact that he does that every single time he pitches is so incredibly impressive that it's mind-boggling. But I want to ask you this question, okay? So Clayton Kershaw's rookie season, he pitched 107 innings in the big leagues and was, you know, it was not a very good 107 innings, but he was still worth 1.5 wins above replacement, okay? Let's say Mackenzie Gore gets the same amount of innings as Clayton Kershaw did in his rookie year this year with the Padres. Do you think he could, you know, pass up the 1.5 wins above replacement that Kershaw was worth? Is it going to be the same, or do you think that it would be, you know, a little bit below that?
I think it could potentially be better. I don't remember what that Dodgers defense was like that season. It's been a long time. And I've killed a lot of brain cells since then, Deegs. but yeah, I mean, I would think it could be better, particularly with that, the defense that could be behind him, the park. I think it could be better than that. I think it could be a two win starter, maybe more. I think, you know, if you start to push like 4 or something like that, you're probably a little silly, but he'd come up and, I mean, dude, he'd come up and he'd be good as Chris Paddock was last year. That wouldn't be a complete surprise. He could absolutely dominate at certain starts. And there, you know, there'd be probably some rough patches and some ugly games as well. But, you know, if he's able to, you know, pitch 106, you know, 105, 110 innings, I think that number is absolutely realistic for him to reach.
All right, let's move on to Luis Patino, a guy who, you know, definitely didn't have the pedigree that Mackenzie Gore did. Obviously, Gore, number 3 pick in the draft. Patino signed for $100,000 out of Columbia. He was a shortstop that just converted to a pitcher when the Padres signed him. You know, he was a skinny, tiny Latino guy coming over to the U.S., pitching in the Midwest League, which is not something easy to do for anybody, and he was absolutely dominant. You know, we saw him add some muscle to that build coming into this year. He was, you know, 97, 98 at times down in High A, Lake Elsinore in the California League. Had no problem there. Likely going to start the year in Double A Amarillo. I don't think there's a sub 2% chance that he breaks with the big league club. Probably less than that, but definitely a guy that I expect to see at some point, you know, with the Padres this year. So give me your thoughts on Luis Patino. You know, a guy that I know particularly you are very fond of as kind of like a personal guy just to follow. But is there, you know, I don't think he has number one upside, but is there number two upside on a quality baseball team for Luis Patino?
Yeah, I think there's number two upside. I think a lot of that comes down to just like sort of honing his commands and control of his release point and his body. He's silly athletic, but he is he's a smaller right-hander. There's certainly concern that comes with that. I think that, you know, pitching with Mackenzie Gore alongside him for a few years now, it seems like he's picked up on some traits, in terms of his delivery and, you know, his mechanics. He added it, you know, pretty fluently because he's such an athletic player. He's 6 feet tall, but, you know, he is a strong build, super athletic. So don't worry about, you know, him sort of sustaining it for the course of a season too much. I'd like to see him add a few more innings. I think there's probably some concern there. I don't think he's like a 2-inning guy. I don't think he's going to, 200-inning guy. I don't think he's going to be a horse. But, you know, he misses bats. You know, he gets weak contact. He's deceptive. His command is not nearly what Gore's is, in my opinion. And he'll miss the zone at times. The fastball, I think, is better than Gore's. That's a potentially double plus pitch, probably plus right now. With his fastball slider, I think he could probably get major league hitters out in a pen right now. Changeup's a pretty good pitch as well. It's just a matter of all that ticking up a little bit for him to sort of reach that number two upside. But he's another guy. It wouldn't shock me if he saw 25 to 30 innings in the major leagues this year. Maybe I don't know what the kind of role will necessarily be, but I would imagine he's going to be held back a little bit more, probably get a little bit more sustained look at Double A because he got, I think, under 10 innings there last year. And he's another guy that, he hasn't had a ton of innings in the body. So, I would like to see him get up to like 130, 140 before you can really start to project him out to be that number two. But I think he's a really fun upside three. Because there's such a wide range of mid rotation guys. We use that term. There's guys, sort of tick a little bit more toward a four, or even some upside fours probably get it. He's an upside three, a guy that could definitely tick up to a two, and just have a really good major league career, where he misses bats. It's probably more of a five or a six inning pitcher just because of what the body is. Not a guy, like I said, that's going to be a horse, but a guy that's going to get hot at times and could really carry you.
Yeah, I think the Padres are looking pretty good with Gore, Patino, and Paddock potentially anchoring their rotation for the next 4 to 5 years at least. So definitely something to look forward there. These two in particular are probably two of the more highly touted pitching prospects we've ever had as an organization. So let's jump into the draft this year because, of all the extensive draft coverage you and all the Prospect Live guys do. CJ Abrams. First round pick by the Padres this year, obviously out of Georgia, had the dream professional debut. Dude hit 400 in the Arizona Rookie League with like a 25 game hitting streak. Can't really ask much more out of him. Made his way to the Midwest League before getting hurt and shutting it down after just one game. But a guy who I think most people expect to start in the Midwest League this year. Give me your thoughts on CJ Abrams as a player overall. The move from shortstop over to either second base or center field is probably inevitable, but just tell me a little bit about what you think about CJ Abrams.
Yeah, I think he was the guy that I was most uncertain about within the top 10 in terms of what his range of outcomes was. I was also the guy, he was also the guy that was most concerned with where he ended up. If he's a guy that ended up with Chicago, with the White Sox or with the Tigers, I'd be a little concerned about his outcome. Maybe even the Royals, though. I have heard sort of some whispers that they've improved just in terms of their development and, their approach analytically. San Diego's been able to get the most out of a lot of these athletes. And I think, the coaching at the lower levels has done a good job of nurturing this talent along the way. and helping those guys, you know, get to, you know, pretty good realistic outcomes in terms of what their future value is. Abrams is a guy that I think is a little bit more pop in the bat than I probably thought. Not that I think it's plus power, but I think it's enough bat speed and just athleticism and strength that, you know, this could be a guy that's like a 50 grade power hitter. You know, maybe he gets to like 20 homers, something like that. He can run the bases. He's going to put the pressure on the defense just with, you know, hard contact and his speed. You know, he's an athletic player that could probably play, you know, a few different places up the diamond if they want to keep him up the middle, if they need him in that capacity. And maybe he does move to center field or is, you know, an elite defensive second baseman just because of what their logjam is over there on the left side of the infield. You know, overall, I mean, he's a true five-tool talent. There aren't many guys like that where, you know, the skills are above average across the board. And I think that's the case with C.J. Abrams. I guess there's some question as to what the power projection is, just sort of because the swing is somewhat linear. But, you know, I tend to trust bat speed with that. And guys that have plus bat speed, I think they can make slight tweaks just in terms of their setup and the swing path, you know, and not get grooved and still, you know, be short to the ball and sort of generate that little bit of extra loft. To, you know, to their power and to their well-struck drives. So he's a guy, I know, I like the overall player, you know, from a realistic standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, I think he's, you know, for me, you know, one of the top three guys when you include Jason, you know, Dominguez. It's like him and Vaughn for me in the draft. I love Abrams. I think his upside is tremendous. And I think he could be just an all-around asset and another really exciting, really fun player that the Padres are going to have for a long time. It just might be 3 years and, you know, until he's at the major league level, which I still think is a pretty good outcome and a pretty good climb through the minors, you know, ascension when you consider what his age is.
Yeah, so in that same draft, obviously, the Padres decided to make Hudson Head the richest third-round pick in the history of Major League Baseball, signing him to a $3 million bonus, which was the most received by a third-round pick. Give me your thoughts on Hudson Head, a guy who I was very high on going into the draft. I think I've said repeatedly that if he had honored his commitment to Oklahoma, I think he would have been a first-round pick in his draft year, a guy who I view as, you know, with legit five-tool potential. So give me your thoughts on Head and how he is going to progress through the system.
Yeah, I should probably keep it down talking about Head.
I knew you were going to say that, dude. I knew the second that came out of my mouth that you were going to say that.
It was like how I made you not make the Zach Brown joke. It should have been the same one. You should have said that like prior to the podcast. So the best part is like in my first-year player draft rankings, I actually have Head, Sasago, whatever his name is, the Japanese guy. I'm not going to learn to say his name until I hear it 1,000 times. And then I have Michael Bush on the other side. So someone asked me where I had Sasago or whatever his name is. And I was like, oh, between Head and Bush. I can't adjust that ranking like at all.
No, that has to stay the same forever. You can't change that at all.
Right. You know what's hilarious though is he's a guy that we were on super early, and we have video up on the YouTube page. By the way, a shameless plug here. If you're not subscribed to our YouTube page, definitely subscribe. There's like thousands of prospect video from all levels of the minors, amateur ball, you know, your little league team. But seriously, like, you know, great college players, all the big tournaments over the last couple of years, like Perfect Game, et cetera, Arizona, Chicago, California, Florida, as well as numerous minor league players as well. And a lot of backfield tape from our former colleague, now Minnesota Twins scout, Jason Panini. But he had a 55 grade future value, 50 grade future value, but at the top of the 50s in his top 100 for the AZL. I mean, this is a dude is it could be absolutely like he mentions here. I think he mentions, well, could be the steal of the draft. You know, his swing is great, you know, separation plus bat speed. You know, he's got power to all fields, you know, his frame's projectable and athletic, and he's going to be able to add good weight, probably a corner outfielder. But you know, I know that Jason, you know, thinks he has a shot to stick in center, but he'd just be a good defensive right fielder with, you know, power and some running ability, guys like that are, you know, the kind of players you can dream on. He's legitimately, you know, a first round player. And if you look at some of these ranks, you know, he's ranked ahead of guys that went in the first round of the draft that were in the AZL alongside him. So yeah, I think it was an absolute steal on the part of the Padres. And once again, you know, AJ Preller playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers, you know?
Yeah, his ability to draft Preller, that is, in the third round the last couple of years, and just in the late middle rounds in general, has been really impressive. So Panini was actually the guy that sold me on Hudson Head, because I had come into my original Prospects Live top 30 with him at like number 19, because I had some reservations of ranking an 18-year-old prep outfielder that not many people knew about, considering that he wasn't a big name on the, you know, showcase circuit, kind of a small town kid from Texas. But Jason actually told me, like, hey, no, you have to put this guy higher on your rankings because he's really good. And I started to watch some video, and yeah, I really like Hudson Head. So let's move on, you know, to this recent J2 2019 international period. The Padres have, you know, to kind of put it in a fair way to every other team, essentially dominated the J2 market the last 4 years. What they've done and the amount of talent they've been able to bring in from the international signings has just been absolutely ridiculous. So let's talk about Reginald Preciado to begin with. You know, he was kind of the higher touted of the four J2 guys they signed this past international market. Give me your thoughts on him. Obviously a guy who is very lean, projectable, 6'4", really skinny kid, probably a guy that's going to outgrow shortstop. But I know Jason Panini in particular was very high on Preciado. So just kind of give me a rundown on him, what you think. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Preciado, like you said, I think he's one of the top players in the class, you know, overall. I think Ishmael Mena, yes, got a little bit more money than he did, you know, but he's really, when you look at it, probably the number two guy in the class. He was a top player at Preciado in Panama. You know, I think trained with his father, still got paid, you know, a bundle of money. But, you know, he's continued to hit. He hit in the tricky league. Folks that have seen him, you know, in the backfields, you know, talk about, you know, how much, you know, good contact there is, projectable power. You know, there's you know, some length to the swing. I think that probably would be, you know, one of the concerns. But I think the barrel, you know, stays in the hitting zone. You know, he's got great timing. You know, he's incredibly athletic. He's, you know, physically strong. I think he's going to maintain that. And I think he's one of these guys that, you know, there's an opportunity, kind of like Tatis, where, yeah, he can move to third base, but he might be athletic enough to stick at the six. And if that's the case, you know, another absolutely like all world sort of talent up the middle. I think he's a guy that could absolutely bust out. Maybe not this year, but once he hits full season ball, you know, he could hit like a ton of bricks. You could see some power if that develops, decent approach, some contact ability, speed, and obviously athleticism in the field. So, for me, Preciado, I think, you know, outside of like sort of Dominguez, Paulson, Pena, and probably like Maximo Acosta, I think I probably have him five.
Yeah, he's definitely a super intriguing guy just because of the fact that, you know, he's so skinny, but he has such a projectable frame and so much room to grow at the age of 16 still. A guy that I'm actually probably higher on than most is Ismael Mena. You know, left outfielder with a real legit 70 grade run tool. Dude absolutely flies. Think he can stay in center field. So just give me your thoughts on Mena.
Yeah, he's a guy that can stick at center. I think there's a ton of defensive value there. The speed's there. He's not like super raw either. Got a ton of range. You know, I mean, he's still young, but, you know, overall from what I've heard from folks who have seen him, the reads are pretty good. And I think, you know, his ultimate projection offensively at the dish is, you know, developing into sort of a top of the order hitter, with sort of mid-teens pop. He can steal some bags because of that, the, that, that, you know, running ability. we'll see what the instincts are like. You know, it's really tough to get a feel for that. Even if a guy's a 70 runner, there might be a guy that's a 50 runner that's a better base stealer, just because of his jumps and, you know, all that sort of stuff, reads, etc. But I think he's sort of that raw ball of clay where there's a lot of different outcomes that can go there. And he's the kind of player, particularly from the international class, that you want to bet on because there's so many different outcomes for him to potentially have success as he climbs the ladder. Especially a guy that can play center field, that's going to get him, you know, some time to develop the bat. And, you know, I think, you know, he's sort of in that mold of like a Christian Pache, not that he's Christian Pache, but it's that same sort of bucket of player where, you know, if their power starts to come and he starts to fill out in that frame already, he's pretty athletic, adds a little bit of strength. Those guys can, you know, really tick up and become much better power hitters than maybe even thought because of bat speed or maybe their ability to sort of, because of their athleticism, get to their lower half and really drive the ball. So yeah, Maeda for me is certainly, you know, number top 10 to 15 player in this class and number two amongst the Padres prospects.
Yeah, so in this same class, the Padres brought in three arms, Luis Gutierrez, Brayan Medina, and Zayed Salinas. Give your thoughts on all three of those guys, particularly probably Gutierrez, who I know Jason Panini was very high on and has a very good side-by-side video of him and Adrian Morejon. So just kind of briefly touch on those guys, what you know about them, and just any other info you want to toss in there.
Yeah, I know that like Medina is the guy with the big fastball and sort of the projectability on that pitch. I think some of the secondaries are pretty raw. I think he's got a slider and a changeup. I thought he was the top
arm
of the class in terms of ranking, maybe dollars.
Yep.
But I know that pitchability wise, Jason, like Gutierrez, sounds like he's kind of at this point a pitchability lefty. You know, real easy delivery, good mechanics, but not a ton of giddy up on the fastball. It's below average velocity at this point. But yeah, I think, you know, he's got feel for, I think it was a breaking ball and maybe a changeup as well. Probably another three pitch mix guy, but I don't know a ton about Gutierrez other than, you know, I'd heard good things and it was really based around sort of, his sequencing and ability to pitch. But yeah, the Padres seem to always pluck a couple of these guys. Anyway, seems like every single class, they got two or three arms.
Yeah, and Zayed Salinas was a guy that signed late out of Mexico, 16-year-old, has some two-way upside, but more of a guy on, you know, on the mound, 6'2", 175 lefty, really lean, projectable build, fastballs like 87 and 90, real feel for a curveball. So just another international arm that, you know, we'll see stateside probably in 2 years, but definitely an intriguing class. Ralph, before we wrap this up, man, are there any other prospects in this system that you want to briefly touch on, maybe just give some insider info on so the people listening to this podcast really can get to know them a tad bit more?
Some insider info, huh?
Yeah, dude. It's your prospect,
you know what's interesting to me is a catcher that I drafted, I think in the second comp round, 73rd overall, was Logan Driscoll. He was out in the AFL and I think popped a couple of homers.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean – he's one of these guys that, like, you know, left-handed hitting catcher. There's some power there. Came from a smaller school, George Mason, which, you know, certainly isn't known for developing top-level baseball prospects or, you know, any sort of sports prospects whatsoever. He hit pretty well on the Cape, but he wasn't a guy that I thought was a standout. I think he's a solid receiver. Maybe ends up like a backup catcher. But it seems like they sort of find one of these guys all the time. Like Owen Miller is another one who might have one of the better hit tools in the minors. And you know, I guess Illinois State, you know, made some noise this year in the regionals. But yeah, I mean, another sort of like mid-major player that they plucked that has, you know, everyday major league upside. And you don't find a lot of guys like that. I think maybe that's pushing a little bit on Logan Driscoll, but you know, for where he went and the fact that, you know, he's matriculated pretty fast and seems like, you know, for a guy that was at a smaller school, he sort of took to the professional game like a fish to water. It's sort of tough to knock a guy like that. So there's a couple players I want to throw out there. And it's funny the way the Padres are able to target really talented high school guys And they found some of those guys and they pinned on some of those guys. Also target in the international market and a wide variety of different types of players in the international market, whether it's position players and toolsy guys up the middle. You know, even a guy like Freeman Reyes, you know, is just a sort of power, you know, masher, as well as all the arms, as they mentioned. And then the fact that they're able to pluck some of these guys from the college ranks, I think it speaks to their commitment to scouting and going the step further, getting a lot of video, some of the things you hear and see from the Padres folks. I know they were one of the first people that hired on the backfield, and they hired somebody that, you know, I had followed for a long time, and just a young kid that went out there with a dream similar to Jason Panini. And he's been working for the Padres for a couple of years now. His name's Chris Kusiolik. And he's a backfield scout, you know, maybe 3 years now, two, 3 years now. And he was one of the first guys talking about, you know, Tatis is going to be, you know, he's a top 20 player. Paddock is going to be, you know, should be a top 20 prospect. And a lot of people sort of thought he was crazy. He's also the first guy that got video of, like, Michelle Baez. And seeing video of Baez for the first time, I mean, on the easy backfields, I mean, what a monster. Yeah. I fell in love immediately. Looks like he's going to be a pen guy, but he's one of my favorite pitching prospects for a while. Don't fall in love with pitching prospects is the moral of that story. But no, yeah, man, a lot of talented players, man. So much to go here.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, Ralph, thank you for coming on the podcast. As always, make sure you follow him on Twitter at ProspectJesus and follow at Prospect Live. But I really appreciate you coming on and talking some Padres stuff with me, man.
Yeah, man.
Well, there you have it, folks. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at the FF Chronicle. And thank you for listening.